Hello, this is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to another 101 films you should have seen.
Probably. So, Lewis, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good.
It's good.
Nice. Yeah. It's nice that you're well. Seen any good films?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Getting out there.
Yeah.
Not just moping around, experiencing life.
No, I've been out there. I went to see Moonrise Kingdom the other week. New Wes Anderson film.
So is it okay? Is it better or worse than Rushmore?
Definitely.
Can only use the films we've covered in 101 Films podcast as our basis, because our listeners, I don't think they've seen any other films. They're with us.
You're assuming that, are you?
Or the only films they've ever seen are the films we've recommended.
Well, are you sure? I think basically the people who listen to this podcast, they look for films they've seen before and then just listen to
No,
the
no,
podcast.
No. I think this is actually like precocious 7-year-olds. That's our main market. They go like, I want to check. And also they've grown up in very religious families, so they have no exposure to television. They've just run away. Yeah. They're like, let's check out some films. They've Googled us. they're just getting to their heads around Google, and they've come to our list. So they're working with us.
So we're basically starting right in at the bottom. People who've never seen films before. That's who you think
internet.
Our audience is.
Or have used the internet before, which is why they think we're amazingly professional.
The first thing they found, they typed in 101 films, and that was the first thing they typed in on the internet.
They've seen our flyers. Flyers all around. Oh, so but
flyers.
It was
so old-fashioned. So old-fashioned.
It was good though. Moonrise
Have you
Kingdom.
Looked at our fanzine that we've been handing out outside cinemas?
If someone could do a fanzine about this, that'd be brilliant. Oh, song out there. Just go on, make two old men happy.
But it has to be photocopied. It can't be on the internet. It has to be photocopied.
It has to be photocopied. Now we have to send you a 50p post order. That'd be brilliant. But it is good, Moonrise Kingdom.
Moonrise Kingdom, yeah, it was really, really good. I think probably one of, if not his best film so far.
Better than the Royal Tenenbaums.
The Royal Tenenbaums.
The Royal Tenenbaums, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was actually a bit better. I enjoyed it very, very much.
And I saw Prometheus. I know you saw Prometheus as well.
We both saw Prometheus.
And that was my first 3D film.
Ooh.
Yeah,
a bit late to the party. Yeah.
I know. And I thought I should probably get around to watching a 3D film, since I spend most of my time going, it's a fad, I'll never catch on.
Old man Ian.
So I finally watch a film in 3D.
And what did you think of the 3D?
To be honest, I kind of forgot it was there.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do after, you kind of notice it at the beginning.
I just adjusted.
And then,
it was okay, but not worth spending extra money on a 3D ticket.
Warner's going to be he's got his hands over his ears now going la la,
no,
la.
No, yeah. The two things stood out. There was like a couple of moments. I think there's a sequence in Prometheus where you see a big 3D model of a
The big map.
Yeah, the big map.
Yeah, yeah.
That was quite cool. Was
yes.
Like, yeah, that stands out. I noticed it then. The only other time I noticed it, when there was some text on the screen, it looked a bit blurry because I've got one slightly weaker eye than the other, so the glasses didn't help that. I couldn't wear my normal glasses, which I would do in cinema. I think it would have to be a film that was purposely made for 3D.
Well, that was purposely made for 3D.
I know, but it still didn't really make much of a deal. I don't know.
That was one of the better 3D films. So,
oh dear.
Probably 3D's not for you.
It wasn't like I didn't come out thinking that was awful, I'm never going to see a film in 3D again. I just came out thinking,
it's alright.
Yeah.
It's alright.
The idea that that's going to save cinemas.
That's laughable, isn't it? Anyway. I could have told you that before going to see a 3D film in the first place.
But going back, Lewis, back before 3D, but back before colour film. Well, actually, no, there were colour films before this, but it was a British film, so it wasn't made in colour. Back before British colour films.
Yeah, British colour wouldn't come to these shores for at least, until at least 1970.
63. Well, 19, when was the first? I know Doctor Who went colour in 1970, and that was that was very early on. That was quite...
Backwards this island seems.
But the quality of our colour was much better than the Americans.
Yeah!
Yeah, Uncle Sam. Still no word from any potential American listeners, I notice.
Oh yeah, we put out the call last week, didn't we?
None. Perhaps they're working on their fanzines. So, the subject of this week's podcast...
is Kind Hearts and Coronets, a fantastic Ealing comedy from 1949.
Yeah, 1949. Ages before me and you were born.
Ages.
But, it's a black comedy, though. A black Ealing comedy.
Oh, it's dark.
I've heard lots and lots about this film. I've seen a couple of Ealing comedies. Not enough. I hold my hands up. I freely admit it. okay, don't shoot me. I've not seen that many Ealing comedies.
The Loads ones of people I... are going, Ealing comedies?
Yeah, I know. Well, there was a big discussion before we watched this film about what film we were going to watch tonight. I think the other film it was a choice between two. This one won. I think we probably will do the other one maybe next week or very, very soon. And we used my flatmate, Paul, as to say, look, have you heard of this film? And he was like, yeah, I've heard of it, not seen it. I was like, how about Kind Heart of Coronets? He's like, never heard of it. Sometimes I wonder, Lewis, if my frame of reference is just so different to everyone else in the universes. Because I seem to get references that no one else understands.
Well, I've got to say, I hadn't heard of Kind Hearts and Coronets until very recently. I mean, I have seen quite a few Ealing comedies. And if you're not sure what an Ealing comedy is, listener, it's a comedy that was made in Ealing.
Yes, Ealing Studios. They were a British studio that had a certain sensibility about them. But we'll come to that a little bit later, I think.
Yeah, but I've seen quite a few of them. Passport to Pimlico, Man in the White Suit. But this one, for some reason, never heard of it. Kind Hearts and Coronets.
I mean, I've heard of it lots of times. And it's quite famous, as it's got Alec Guinness in it, and he plays eight people, I think, eight different roles.
Yeah, something like that.
Plays eight members of a particular family, long before Eddie Murphy was doing it in The Nutty Professor.
If you're thinking, well, Eddie Murphy, Nutty Professor.
Long before Mike Myers was doing it in the Austin Powers films.
Yeah, it's quite a refreshing breath of fresh air to see someone do it quite so well.
Yeah, actually do a good job of it. Well, shall we do the pitch and plot, I guess?
Yeah. So, well, perhaps seeing as you seem to know everything about this film, you should do the pitch and plot.
All right. A delightfully proper Englishman / Italian takes his revenge on a load of parasites.
Yeah, it's pretty apt. Pretty apt.
Yeah, I mean, very, very briefly, Dennis Price, who reminded me so much of Peter Sellers in this film.
Yes.
Really like Peter Sellers.
Very much so.
Yeah, like, for a long time, I was just like, who do you remind me of? And it's a great performance. Dennis Price plays Louis Manzini, a half Italian, half Englishman, who is the product of a marriage between a woman of a very aristocratic family called the how do you pronounce it?
Dascoigne.
Dascoigne, and Italian opera singer,
and the family disown her.
Yeah, disown her, and
for marrying a commoner.
Exactly. I mean, oh, class! How more English can you get? And he basically decides to get his revenge on them after his mother's death, and it's about him bumping them all off
so he can become the Duke.
The great thing about it is that he's completely ruthless, but in a very charming way. The family aren't, you can't, I suppose you would expect the family to be painted as villains of the piece, and one or two aren't particularly pleasant, but one or two are actually quite nice, and he still kills them anyway.
They certainly don't deserve to be murdered.
No, in cold blood.
And even some people who aren't to do with the family get murdered as well, just for shits and giggles.
But it's, an incredibly black comedy. Mm. But I didn't realise quite how dark it would get.
Yeah.
And how gleefully dark it would get as well. And quite how risque it was.
Mm.
Lots of innuendo.
Yes, yeah. It's interesting, actually. I was reading the American version of the film was cut.
Oh, yeah, I read the same thing, yeah. And there's one of the members of the Descones is a reverend, and they cut a lot of that out because, obviously, it's insulting religion.
Yes, you can't insult a vicar.
No, even
even an idiot vicar.
Yeah, even an idiot vicar. Also, they play down the kind of the
adultery.
The adultery and the infidelity between Louis Manzini and Joan Greenwood's character, Sybilla Holland.
Lovely Joan Greenwood.
She is lovely in this.
She is lovely. I sit there going, oh, it's Felicity Kendall, but from an earlier age.
It is, and we had to double check. This lady, I mean, Joan Greenwood, has the voice of Felicity Kendall.
She's got this lovely feline kind of purring.
And she looks very much like Felicity Kendall, to the point where me and Lewis weren't sure if perhaps she was Felicity Kendall's mum. But she wasn't, sadly. I think Felicity Kendall is one of those actresses. There is which you don't really get anymore, of a posh, very well-spoken actress. Mm. Comes from quite a good background.
Deigned to tread the boards.
Yes. She probably does come from quite a good family. So,
yeah.
Oh, you see, how British is this? We're already talking about good families and
that's very fitting.
Shall we, before we go on, Let's do the trivia quiz.
Let's do the trivia quiz.
Trivia quiz.
Question one. Now, we already mentioned that Alec Guinness murders the members of the Descone family, and he plays eight of them. Mm-hmm. But how many did he actually kill?
Ah, because there are a couple that died of natural causes, aren't there? I think six.
That's correct.
Yes!
He does kill six. One dies of a natural cause of a stroke, and then later he dies upon hearing the news that another member of his family has died. And another one is a ship captain who confuses port and starboard. Second, from what poem does the title come from? A point for the author of the poem and half a point for the name of the poem.
Oh, okay. I know the author is Tennyson.
Half a point.
And the poem, I have no idea, sorry.
Okay, it's Lady Clara Verdevere.
We'll never have got that.
Call yourself an English. 3 years of English. That's a university education speaking there.
Yeah, we did Blake. Man's poem.
And you probably saw this, so you probably know the answer to this. I won't even be surprised it's one of your questions, but... Which annoying US comedian was due to star in a Mike Nichols 2000 remake of the film as in the Alec Guinness roles?
Oh, I don't know, but I'll guess. Mike Myers.
Well, that is a good guess, actually. It was actually Robin Williams with Will Smith due to take the role of Dennis Price.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Why? It doesn't even make sense.
I know. 1.5 points there, Lewis.
Wow. Okay, question one. Why does Louis dislike Lionel's choice of living in Bayswater?
Oh, it's on the wrong side of the park.
Yeah, that line made me laugh.
We will talk about class in this film later, because there are so many just beautifully cutting lines. And that's one. Lionel, his kind of love rival for is Sibella's hand. He just is typical of him to live on the wrong side of the park.
I had a tedious journey to Bayswater.
that's it. It's the word tedious. Oh, excellent.
Okay, which of these Ealing comedies does Alec Guinness not star in?
Oh, okay.
The Lavender Hill Mob, Passport to Pimlico, The Man in the White Suit, The Lady Killers.
It is Passport to Pimlico.
Straight in there. Yes, you're right.
Bam!
Bam! And last one, where does Louis shoot down Agatha's balloon?
Oh, it's Berkeley Square.
Berkeley Square.
Yes.
3 out of 3.
Yes!
Well done. What a comeback.
Stormed it. I would say the defining thing about this film is the performances of Alec Guinness.
Yeah, he's amazing in this.
Absolutely incredible.
I mentioned Agatha in the questions.
Yes, yeah.
He made a very convincing Agatha. I thought it was very funny.
He does, yeah, he does. He plays an excellent woman. He's great because he just infuses so much character in each of the different roles. The vicar is so different for example. He plays another kind of old man character in it as well. The
Duke?
Not the Duke, the bank. He plays the Duke.
Oh, the banker, yeah.
The banker, and they're completely different.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. And fantastic. What also I really love about that, as he plays the banker, son is the first of the family to be killed, and then the banker takes on unknowingly Dennis Price as his replacement, and he's. Plays him, even though it's a comedy, he sort of doesn't lose sight of the fact that this man has lost his son, and it's just he's changed him a bit, and he's become a nicer person for it.
Yeah,
it's a great little performance, and that's just one of the roles he does.
I mean, some of the roles, I mean, they're very fleeting.
Yes, they are.
Agatha is barely in it, and Horatio, they have very little screen time. I don't think hardly any speaking parts.
No,
but sheer variety is fantastic.
Yeah, and it really is.
He was quite a good actor.
He was, wasn't he? He was. You can appreciate.
Shame he's remembered for Star Wars.
It is. I mean, well.
He was very cutting about Star Wars in his autobiography.
He was, and he really just did it for the money, didn't he?
Yeah, totally.
But then again, a lot of the people who seem to have appeared in Star Wars are quite cutting. Harrison Ford isn't particularly nice about it.
Just takes the checks.
Carrie Fisher? I don't think she is.
No. She spent most of her career trying to get away from it, isn't she, really?
Mark Hamill?
Yeah.
He probably... he's quite a good actor, actually, Mark Hamill, when he's in the right role.
Mm.
I.e. the Joker. The voice of the Joker.
I wondered how long it was going to be before we mentioned Batman.
still managed to mention Batman in this. Incredible. But fantastic. Just what an amazing actor. What an amazing performance.
But apart from Alec, each of the performers is absolutely fantastic. The acting is really, really good in this film. I mean, Dennis Price puts in an amazing performance as Louis. Yeah. And Valerie Hobson and Jane Greenwood, they're all absolutely fantastic.
It is. I mean, especially Dennis Price, who, despite Alec's 8 roles, probably has the most screen time. Dennis is at the heart of the entire film.
He still manages to keep up with him, despite the fact that Alec is kind of a...
Yeah.
There's all these different roles.
And it's a fantastic performance because he is a horrific... Really, if you kind of... on paper, he brutally murders 6 people.
As well as others as well.
Yeah, as well as people who just happened to get caught in the crossfire.
Yeah.
Shows very little in the way of remorse about most of them. Yet you can't help but root for him.
Yeah.
He's because so likable. And it is interesting because as the film goes on, you do start to, you do turn against him slightly, as he seems to lose his innocence with each murder, as he becomes slightly darker and a little bit more brutal with each one. You do start to kind of turn a little bit against him.
Yeah, I think it starts off as kind of a revenge for a kind of a wrong to his family, but towards the end, it feels more like he just... It's greed.
Greed, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just out for what he can get. You know, taking advantage of people and just doing the best he can to get as much as he can out of the whole situation. But the great thing is, I mean, obviously I know a lot of it's down to the script, but just the delivery of some of those just beautifully cutting lines.
I mean,
right from the beginning, I think one of the lines that made me laugh out loud was at the beginning of the film, he's not murdering, he's not even really thinking about murdering the family, but he's keeping track of them because he knows that he has a chance of becoming the Duke if enough of them die, so he just keeps an eye of how many are born and how many die. And there's a great bit when he goes, some good news, such and such died, but this is terrible, as one of the Dukes had twin boys. Luckily, a case of diphtheria took out not just the twins, but also the mother as well. And you see, like, crossing off the names on a family tree in a really cheerful way.
I know, it's so dark, but...
Yeah, I mean, essentially, that's the death of 2 baby children. And it's, you know, 2 little babies, but...
Took out the mother as a bonus.
Yeah, that's right. But he says, it's such a delightful, like, light-hearted way. You're like, yeah, and it's quite... Oh, good for you. Things are finally going your way.
But I think one thing it does really raise is the whole spectre of class that kind of haunts British society. I mean, this was filmed in 1949, and it was harking back to the Edwardian era.
Yeah, set in the kind of Edwardian time, so pre-First World War.
Yeah.
Just turn of the century.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, in many ways, yeah, okay, we don't have landed gentry so much anymore. They're still there, but they're...
Oh, yeah, they just don't rub our noses anymore. They got clever.
But, it's still very much a part of British society.
It always is. Class, I mean, we could talk that for we could do 101 podcasts on class alone.
Let's
class.
Do it!
that's the sequel.
I don't think there are 101 classes, though, are there?
No, but what you could do is 101 ways that class infects pretty much all of British culture and pop culture and society and films and music and everything, because it's there. You scrape the surface of pretty much anything in Britain. Most of our comedy is based on class and the differences in class. And, 40 Towers worked so well because it's all about him trying to be better than he is.
Mm.
Class is there all the time. So it taps into something uniquely British, I think.
Well, even in Harry Potter, something, you know...
Oh, yeah,
as recent as that's basically all about class, that entire thing.
Yeah, that's very true, yeah. It's funny, we can never quite escape it, can we?
I know. We just invent new ways to perpetuate it, I think.
And the Ealing comedies are often... Well, actually, it's interesting because what I know about Ealing comedies, and as I say, I've not seen a huge amount, But my impression was a defining trait of a lot of evening comedies was a someone going against kind of almost petty bureaucracy, mm-hmm. of going against the man, although we didn't call it the man back then, mm-hmm. of, you know, people enforcing rules for rules' sake, mm-hmm. or people... and I suppose this film has a little bit about that, of the fact that Louis is forced out of... The whole thing starts because they basically decide they... don't want anything to do with him. Because if they did, then none of them would have been killed. Mm. He would have just been quite happy with a small part of his life. But because they forced him out completely, he decides to enact this revenge.
The snub. Never snub a
is
man.
Is there anything worse?
Never snub a man. Cut him dead in the street, if you will.
Joan Greenwood's performance is also very good. As, what's her name? Sibella.
I've got to point out, at this point, amazing dresses in this film.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, great. That was
not something
fashion.
I would normally pay attention to.
Giant hats.
I don't sit there going, oh, what nice dress that woman's got. but the costumes that the women wear in this are just ridiculously over the top, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. It's yeah.
She comes in with a hat as high as the ceiling.
Well, that was the style, wasn't it, of that?
Oh, we were born in the wrong age.
Well,
I want a quarter.
Women of our class would dress like that, Lewis. It's only the upper classes.
Exactly. I want a quarter Duke's daughter.
Finery. But she's great in this because she plays almost a villain as well.
Yeah.
It's proven at the end of the film. Yeah. You kind of find that she is just as kind of dark. Mm. And out to get what she can get as Louis is.
Well, you know, very early on, it's revealed that, you know, she's seeking the money, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
When Louis says, oh, I might be coming into some money, suddenly her interest perks up.
It does, yeah. Her face literally just changes. She suddenly goes, oh. She plays like a childhood friend of his that he has a kind of crush on. Mm. And, yeah, as the film goes on, she just gets... Yeah, she's quite salty in this. She is, isn't she?
She is.
Yeah. This is the adultery they were talking about. She marries and continues to see our Louis. Again, he makes it seem perfectly normal, perfectly acceptable. There's that great line in there where... what is it? Something about... the thing about women is that in these matters, they often have a certain expectation of how things are going to be. And even when the situation they're in is their own fault, they have a tendency to blame others. it's a little bit like Oscar Wilde.
There's
a kind of that wit, that sort of cutting, rapier wit, where he just doesn't care. I was reading a little bit about Dennis Brice. He had quite a sad life, actually.
Oh, yeah.
He was a homosexual, and obviously back then that was not something you could really sort of... live openly with, and so he sort of forced himself to marry to try and live a normal life, and became an alcoholic really.
Oh, that's
and
sad.
He died quite an early age at 58. Mm. So yeah, a real shame. But perhaps, who knows, that feeling of being on the outside of things, perhaps that adds that kind of slight edge to the film. Yeah, so it's perhaps coming from somewhere for Dennis Price's performance, where he feels excluded from something. Society doesn't really want him. Mm. So he's taking his very amusing revenge. Hilarious. 5 stars. Do you think a film like this would be made now? That kind of black comedy.
Well, we already had a very black comedy recently with Four Lions.
No, oh, that's true. Yeah,
not that long ago.
No, I haven't seen that. That's the Chris Morris.
Yeah, thing. Hilarious comedy about terrorist bombings.
Yeah, that's true. I'd forgotten all about that.
See, I definitely think there is a tradition of, you know, seriously black comedy, but
yeah, very true.
Something about class like this, though, I think perhaps you wouldn't make it overtly about class.
Mm.
You might have to hide it away underneath Will Smith and Robin Williams.
This is really is a quintessentially English film. Mm. It'd be difficult to translate to the American market. A funny little thing about this, you know, the film ends with him on trial in front of the House of Lords.
Yes, he gets...
Because he's a duke. They actually scrapped that in the year this film was released.
Really?
Yes. Oh. Nothing to do with the film, but...
I was hoping that, you know, if by chance I do someday become a duke, then maybe I can be asked to be tried in the House of Lords.
When you commit your brutal crime.
Yeah, exactly. I'd have to kill quite a few people to get to a dukedom, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the Packwood family, you'd have to go quite high up.
Exactly. It'd be like Hobo with a shotgun.
3 million dead. But Lewis is finally King of England.
Anyway, do you think this film's got any weaknesses? The only one I could think of was at the beginning with the kind of hangman. Initially, my thoughts were on that awful barman in Dracula 1958.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
And I was like, oh no, it's going to be one of these weak comedy characters. Actually, it was quite good.
It's Miles Mallison playing the Mr. Elliot, the hangman.
Yeah.
Yes, and he plays quite a... Well, what's his name? Is it Perrypot, the hangman, who was actually alive at the time?
Enlighten me.
Yeah, well, it's quite an interesting story, right? So England had an official executioner. Yeah, and he was the last executioner.
Oh, right.
And he wrote an autobiography. It's quite interesting. He was there at the Nuremberg trials as well.
Oh, right.
And he had to kill some of the Nazi war criminals.
Mm.
And he treated it very much as a science, you know, the exact length of the rope and the weight of the individual to try and make it as clean and as, you know, as humane as possible.
Yeah, because the hangman in this had a cutting line, didn't he, about with the switch from silken rope to hemp.
Yeah, that's why he wants to retire. He goes, I'm a silk man, none of this hemp nonsense. Well, it's quite funny. Yeah, you're right. I did think that. I thought straight away of the kind of comedy Undertaker who takes measurements of people. It happens in Westerns, that sort of thing. And as soon as he walked in, I thought that. But he kind of redeems himself, actually.
Yeah.
He redeems himself as it goes on.
Yeah,
He's very careful about the exact way to address the Duke. Again, very much class in the UK. Even when you're killing a man, you want to make sure you don't want to accidentally insult him by calling him a lord rather than your grace. But I mean, other than that, I can't really think of any weaknesses. I think it went at a fair old pace. I mean, I suppose the only weaknesses you could say are very much just connected to the fact that, you know, there's some slightly dodgy-looking model shots of boats colliding, things like that. Yeah. But that was that's unavoidable. It's of its time.
I think it was, it hangs together very well. It's a great, well-made, well-acted film, and highly recommended for anyone who's listened to this. If you haven't watched it, watch it.
Yeah.
And actually, while we're talking about this, I should say that actually Hannah recommended this to us. So thank you, Hannah.
She did, yes, that's true. Yeah, she did, Hannah. Well, I've heard it, and a couple of other people at work recommended it to you.
Yeah, a couple of people have recommended this, and The Guardian recommended it as well.
The Guardian newspaper. Yeah, I mean, they're big fans of ours. Straight away.
Okay, so if you've got any films you'd recommend to us, please write in at 101films@gmail.com.
You can also check us out on our website, 101films.wordpress.com.
And follow us at 101films on Twitter.
And on our Facebook group as well.
And on our Facebook
group. Links all from the website. Sorry, I don't know why I turned into a Dalek at the end there.
Oh, it's good, I liked it.
We should Well, pretty much any film could be improved by just at the end, suddenly like, it's one character going, huh? Then looking over his shoulder and going, huh? Daleks! And the camera pan out and Daleks bursting into the room.
Either that or Donald Sutherland turning around and going,
great. All right, bye.
Bye. Sorry, I got the giggles.